think about your personal schedule and find ways of improving 10% every week. In 1 year, you will be a totally different law firm, a totally different professional, a totally different legal department.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. Today, I have the very pleasure of hosting Marco Imperiale, straight from Italy. Hey, Marco. Good to meet you, man.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Saji. Great to be here.
Well, there's so much I can say in your introduction. I'm going to leave it to you to actually go through it. But Marco is the founder of and managing director of Better Ipsum, a benefit corporation in the legal field. But you have so much other things from, you know, graduating from Harvard to being a Justin professor in Polimoda. There's a lot of things we can go into, but maybe we start with just a quick kind of like overview of what you guys are up to right now and a little bit of your story.
How many hours do we have?
I mean, you know, we can go as long as
I will try to be quick. I graduated in law from Bologna University Law School 2009 with a master's thesis in philosophy. By the way, I did my thesis in the United States and University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And after that, because of the fact that I was, and I still am, in my spare time a musician, I started helping other professionals and musicians and daughters of the music business, working for a boutique law firm in the music field and developing my law for copyright. After several years in copyright, and after also my first sabbatical, which included a master in law at Harvard Law School, and my first Camino de Santiago, by the way, I've done 11, I made a career shift and basically decided to ride the wave of legal innovation. And the decision was not random, so it's not searching for my soul. It was mostly for the fact that what I've seen in the music business in 1999 with Napster that comes and disrupts an entire industry, because the recording industry is entirely disrupted now. We pay for music, but most of the time we pay for the playlists, not to reward the authors. The idea is that now the music is free. We pay for concerts, we pay for merchandising, we pay for synchronizations, whatever, but music should be free. And I noticed that what happened in the music industry was likely to happen in the legal field. And say, that's interesting, because what's the value provided by lawyers most of the time is knowledge. And now we can start a long conversation about the fact that the added value of lawyers is different, and we can get into KPIs and ROIs and, you know, what's the value of trust and blah, blah, blah. But truth is, knowledge as an asset is going to be taken by AI. And it was pretty clear in 2016 as well, not just now. And so the last 10 years of my career, I've been in the legal innovation field. I've been the head of innovation of one of the leading Italian law firms. And then I started Better Ipsum to change the legal profession from within, because the legal industry is rising. The fact is that the legal industry as we know it is going to be really hit by tech. And so it's a matter of changing your perspective. It's something like doctors, you know, if you want to heal patients, probably this is the best time ever. If you want to do the job that your grandfather did, probably it's a very risky move. Let's put it this way. And that's pretty much it. I've developed a passion for legal design and design thinking for the legal field, for neurodiversity, for social reporting in law firms, for well-being in the legal field. I'm the president of UIA, Unione Internazionale degli Avvocati, the oldest and one of the largest associations of lawyers worldwide, because I really care about well-being and mental health of lawyers. And that's pretty much it. I could go on for hours and hours, but I think that that's not the place and time for that.
We're more aligned than I even realized going into the conversation. First of all, I loved the parallel to the music and actually how you got to it. And I couldn't agree more. When you think about knowledge being free, and you think about, and you kind of talked about the importance of the humans, if you will, the people within the legal department and the operation of how you kind of think about that. where are we now in that transition, in your point of view of this is going to, there was Napster in the 90s, and where we are right now in the cycle when it comes to music? Where are we in the cycle when it comes to legal?
It's not an easy question, because lawyers want to tell themselves that they are very advanced. They want to tell themselves that they really know how to use AI tools. They really want to tell themselves that their departments, their law firms are top-notch, providing legal services, you know, tech-based, introducing new models. But when you look at the dynamics, it's very old style. You know, we still use the same software. We still use the same templates. We still work the way we've always worked. There are articles since probably 1980s about the end of the billable hours, and still billable hours are still here in 2025. And so I think that a change is going to come. It will be way slower than I expected when I started my journey, but it will happen. And it will happen both in terms of lawyers as professionals, and both in terms of the products or the services that they're offering. And both these changes will be human-based. Now we care about diversity, we care about well-being for lawyers, because we started reflecting about the price of burnout, the price of anxiety disorders, the price of billing 3,000 hours a year, the price of sleep deprivation, and both for clients and for law firms. And when you speak about money, lawyers are very, how can I say, attentive. And so when you speak about the price of well-being in terms of sensory retention, in terms of belonging, in terms of talent attraction, in terms of social reporting for clients, then something is going to change. And at the same time, we see that legalese, pretty good for B2B, but in terms of B2C, is considered as probably one of the biggest enemies. I don't know if my goal of reaching clear communication as an SDG over a human right will be achieved sooner or later, but there's a community of professionals that thinks that, especially regarding consumers, but not only regarding consumers, legal language and the way the legal messages are conveyed are going to change. And they're going to change in two ways. The first is changing the language. We will shift probably into plain. And so the idea of lawyers speaking the language of the final user will be probably pretty impactful in the next few years. And that's mesmerizing, because we are bringing into the legal field what Amazon, Uber, Airbnb, Netflix, Disney Plus, whatever, have done in other fields. But it's also a matter of using the tools that the digital world is offering us. You know, design thinking methodologies, visuals, why not gamifying the legal languages? I mean, our children are playing with TikTok, and you know, they're playing video games. We shifted from Facebook to Instagram, from Instagram to TikTok and Snapchat. The text is way, way less. We have the attention span probably of a goldfish. There's a research from Microsoft Canada to 2015. I mean, this research has been contested, but the idea is that the message is going to come, it is going to change. And if you think about companies, if you think about institutions, because legal can be pretty wide as a concept, if you think about access to justice, these are pretty big changes. And then we can raise the threshold and think, okay, now we've always seen contracts as a bunch of words, policies as a bunch of words. But what about considering contracts as policies as data centers? And what about bringing a KPI and ROI mentality in the contracting field? Once again, it's not Marco, it's not Bederiksum. It's a bunch of professionals and a bunch of institutions. Think about WordCommerce and contracting, just to say one, that are advocating for this change. And so exciting times ahead, and at the same time, scary times ahead, because most of law firms are not working on their business model. They still squeeze the lemon, and things are going quite well, but somehow, some way, some clients will start asking about the pricing of the services and, you know, how are you calculating your efforts? And somehow, some way, someone will have to pay for all these tech platforms that are raising millions of dollars. Somehow, some way, someone will need to consider the impact of Big Four on legal services. And what's their space? Is it going to be bigger? Is it going to be lower? Are they doing our job or not? And once again, I could speak for hours about this kind of topics, but we tend to underestimate how much different the legal practices are. If you go into a white collar practice, to a transactional practice, to a litigation practice, all of them are lawyers. But at the same time, their clients ask for different things. Their margins are different. I mean, the margins of tax, for example, are not comparable to the margins of white collar. And at the same time, if you look at the equity structure of law firms, we tend to consider lawyers in the same way. I'm pretty generic, but the way I look at the legal field is more like all of us are doctors. We don't save lives. But like doctors, there are generic doctors that are specialists in the dermatologists, that there's, you know, the specialist in injuries, whatever. And some of them are working in big hospitals. Some of them are working in small hospitals. Some of them are working with public hospitals. And most of them are doing a job that is useful for the society. And I believe that lawyering is doing a job that is very good for the society. And so we need to reflect about the purpose of what we're doing and how we are doing what we're doing and what can we do in order to improve what we do.
I think, you know, you touched on a lot of all the different parts here. And you know what's interesting to me, and to add even further, or maybe even you kind of go back to go outwards, which in many ways is to actually go deeper. There's something that I don't think is people talk enough about, which is once a big shift, a transformational shift happens, it's not only impacting the way you consume or service or interact with the field, but the field itself. Okay, let's cup. You mentioned a lot of different examples, all right? So, you know, music, when we started this conversation, have dramatically changed how you consume music. You pay for music, you interact with music, but music itself hasn't as much in the first kind of like couple decades of that versus now with AI, some, you know, start like you can synthesize a lot of things. Where does the line go? You know, I've saw a lot of clips of professional musicians immediately can identify whether a guitar riff was done by a machine or I don't know if most end user can tell the difference. That changes something there. A more advanced example is actually news in like content creators, right? Where the distribution and the system happens first, but then it's been enough time now where the definition of who is producing content, teaching people, bringing information to people and so on, that has changed dramatically the concept of what news are, you know, and for better than worse. Like we can have a whole discussion of if it's good or bad. I'm not even going there. Just the point that it changed. And I can go on and on, right? With medical, you mentioned doctors a lot. You know, they haven't changed enough either way. They still need to work through the service change. But in theory, AI can really change fundamentally also what is medicine, like what is the job? What do you even expect from a medicine, medical advice to look like or an operation to look like? That to me is fascinating, right? Is because you can almost like calling out the problem with the law firms or lawyers or legal teams still trying to figure out how to update their, you know, their interaction with the world is new in this new reality. It might, you know, wake up too late to realize that actually the job has changed completely and they're not even practicing the same law anymore, quote unquote.
I mean, it's a very exciting topic, and AI is a kind of a even more than once in a generation revolution. I think that it's more than World War Alta Vista, more than the dot-com revolution. I think that probably the biggest similarity is the Industrial Revolution. So it will change the society. new jobs will come at the same time. Some of the jobs we're doing will be impacted. I'm pretty skeptical about everyone making predictions because nobody is able to make predictions, not only because it's very risky, but also because geopolitics can impact the AI so much. And nobody has the crystal ball to make it. And regarding law firms, people are asking me, why do you think that this time is different? I mean, I was doing the first pilot, despite the fact that I was working in a civil law country for a civil law firm. So globally, local law firm, but still, you know, most of the work was Italy-based. So I was still working with AI tools, you know, whether it's due diligence automation, contract automation. So why do I think that this time is different? It's not because, I would say, 2,500,000,000 people or something like that try ChatGPT or whatever. And I think that lawyers are pretty good in speaking the languages of their clients. And most of the clients, whether they like it or not, whether they know it or not, are already AI companies. Because marketing is AI, supply chain is AI, procurement is AI, contract management is AI, HR is AI, e-commerce is AI, you know, maybe legal is AI as well. So they need to start adopting these tools. Because otherwise, the client will not be able to communicate with them the way the client wants. And if the client is asking for something, then it's when the law firms tend to move. And I'm very intrigued about seeing how law firms are going to move, because it's not a matter of, okay, do we do this impact assessment that you never did an impact assessment that you sell to the clients? Oh, no, I'm an expert in legal assessments. We started legal assessments before everyone others, blah, blah, blah. Stuff that law firms are doing. It's a matter of, okay, can you do a contract management platform in 14 different countries? Okay, do that. And whoever did that knows that this is a process matter. This is a collaboration matter. This is a matter of putting the technicians, the lawyers, the designers, the devs, engineers, project managers at the same table, thinking a different way. And that's where the fun begins. Because if law firms are not able to make an humbleness shower and say, okay, maybe this is different, then they're going to pay a big price. I mean, in terms of margins, in terms of money. What I'm seeing in the last few months, and this is scares me, really. I mean, AI scares me. One day I wake up excited, one day I wake up scared, and one day I wake up overwhelmed. This usually one of the three, and one of the three is a mix of them. But coming back to law firms, one of the things that scares me is that the lawyers I'm seeing, I mean, equity partners, they're doing tax restructuring, white collar, you know, hate technology, you know, still printing stuff, are treating AI as something to learn as another field of law. So something like, okay, at the beginning of my career, I was a litigator, and then I became a tax lawyer after a career shift, and now I'll make another career shift, and I will become an AI lawyer, doing risk assessments, compliance, whatever. And no. It doesn't work this way. It doesn't work. AI is not a new legal field. It's a new way of thinking the legal world. It's a new way of delivering legal services. And the law firms that are, and the legal departments as well, because most of them are lawyers, and that are able to leverage on this evolution will become very rich in a very fast time. The ones that are not doing, will see their profits collapsing. I'm not speaking about 6 months. In 6 months, probably nothing will happen. But in a 3 to 5 or 5 to 10 year scenario, I would say that the American 200 ranking will be very different from the one we see now.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
I think the fundamentalness of it, I really like how you described the overwhelming, excited or scared. I think a lot of people maybe don't define it that way, but they feel that way and sometimes are not rationalized their plan around it because of that, because they're either overwhelmed or they're scared and or they feel that someone is overexcited. I do think expectations, to your earlier point, are already different. I think to your point about the .com and the internet, that change our perception of accessing knowledge. If a lawyer before that or a doctor before that held like a secret book, you know, that they had access to and could read, internet changed that into a point of like, you know, the data is there, but it was so much information that digesting it still required the skills of knowing what the hell are we even talking about here. So I think that's why it's an industrial revolution type of moment, because when history would look back, it will be the same arc where first we made information accessible, just like maybe the steam engine was available to create machines in a factory. But before you actually had the factory line, the assembly line, and the actual sort of like economics around it, you didn't really get to the industrial revolution yet. And I think handling the information is already different. You see it with the ChatGPT growth. It's not because it's cool. My grandma is 80 something, and if not 90 something, and she's actually using ChatGPT. It's insane. It's crazy. She never learned how to use Google properly, but ChatGPT she knows how to use because it is speaking her language. So I do think that everything you're saying, I would just put like a glaring neons behind it, because I don't think people understand.
Let me stress something, if I may. Maybe because I'm biased, you know, I'm a mindfulness trainer. I'm really into well-being, neurodiversity, a mediator, whatever. So the human factor is characterizing, and is a leitmotif of my career. So once again, maybe I'm biased, but our brains are not wired for this amount of information, of data, of numbers. And then we are already embodying the scars of the post-COVID scenario. And now this avalanche, this tsunami of new regulations, informations, geopolitics, whatever. And if the best possible strategy as a lawyer is limiting the damages, there's something wrong with the system. And I don't know how the system is going to change, when the system is going to change, and how much is going to be affected. Not much people tend to be affected. I don't know how AI will impact access to justice. It can be mesmerizing, or it can be just a 10% increase, whatever we are seeing now. But what I feel is that something has to change, because at the end of the day, technologies are changing, but the humans is still there. And research we're doing on the brain just tells us that the breaks and the pauses are way more important than the music. That's not my quote, it's from Miles Davis. And if you look at the endless flow of emails, of messaging, of WhatsApping, of reliability 24/7, of ChatGPT-5 was released a couple of weeks ago, and you have already books that you need to know, presentations that you need to prepare, and clients that are asking for implementations and comparisons charts with Claude, with Gemini, and we're speaking only about general purpose systems. I mean, that's insane. It's insane that legal tech companies can raise billions of dollars in just a couple of years. It's insane that 2.5 billion people are just using a general purpose model, including your grandma. It's insane that most of people using that don't know about the concept of plausibility, and they're taking everything for granted because they're adopting the same mentality of Google. And I'm going to maybe to Mexico without knowing that I need a visa because ChatGPT told me that, but ChatGPT is not the Bible. Well, you can say that maybe the Bible is wrong, but that's another man. But you got the point. And so once again, very scary, very exciting, and very overwhelming times ahead.
Yeah, and it's just very different, right? And I think that's kind of where you're going to. There was one last point I wanted to make, actually, that you kind of also discussed. Talking about the Industrial Revolution too, I don't think most people understand how different was society before. Like access to justice, access to freedoms, access to, you know, there's a lot of societies in the world right now that are not what we are, you and me in the West, and in, you know, are assuming for granted. And the catalyzer for that change is not the only reason, but a big part of it is the new realities that was created post-industrial revolution. What new realities are being created right now? How, what of those risks and changes in the macro level are going to be tactical differences? You know, what, like what is around the corner that is so fundamentally different? And when you think about, again, free society, that was a dream that, again, I'm not saying the Industrial Revolution is the only reason it happened, but it's a big factor of it because it changes the essence of what it means to feed hundreds of millions of people. You know what I mean? And I do think that we're in the prefaces of that. And I do agree with you that there's going to be a lot of issues on the way there. Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, like you said, we can talk about it for hours.
Yeah, I think that everybody agrees that something is going to change. I think that we are underestimating the 10-year plan and we are overestimating the 6 months. It's, once again, it's not from me, it's from Bill Gates. And I also think that we tend to underestimate how painful the change might be. Because if you look at lawyers, if you look at Seligman, Larry Richard, whatever, you know, psychologists that research them from a clinical perspective, they are the most averse to change. And so when you think about professions that are against change, you think about priests, nuns, and lawyers. These are, and so I'm very eager to see how the legal profession will adapt to everything that's going to come. Because this is not the introduction of telefax, the introduction of the emails. This is something bigger. This is something that goes back to what you study and why you studied. Think about litigation. Think about laws made by machines. Think about judgments made by machines. I'm speaking about realistic scenarios. And maybe in the United States, you can be a litigation partner and in college studying chemistry, biology, computer science, engineering, whatever. But in Italy, like me, I've done high school with a focus on classical studies, and then I've done law school, 5 years of oral exams, and then 2 years traineeship, you know, to become a lawyer, doing mainly writing, because I haven't done it in a university according to the Italian structure. But the idea is that you don't have a mathematics, data science, statistics background. And if you're thinking about judgments in 2030, arbitration in 2030, data will be way more relevant than it is now. And the way we look at data is crucial. No, nobody taught us design thinking in the university. Nobody taught us statistics. Nobody taught us basic mathematics. No one taught us project management. No one taught us, you know, Six Sigma. You can do it after. No one taught us coding. I'm not saying that lawyers will be professional coders. That's not what I'm asking lawyers. I think that the society will ask lawyers to speak with a coder, to speak with a designer, to speak with a project manager. And for lawyers, it will be way harder than they think. Because maybe it's informality. Maybe it's an not hierarchical approach. Maybe it's knowing that the amount of an hour that you charge is different than one of a designer. But at the same time, all of you are needed for the project. So it's a matter of also money and pricing. And I'm really looking forward to see what the future is going to bring us. Because whether you're in the United States, in Europe, in South America, in India, it's a pretty global question. What will be legal profession in 2030? And what will be the rule of law and its impact on the society in 2030? And I'm not using random words. When I speak about the rule of law, it's because in 2025, the rule of law became way more important. And I've seen lots of lawyers asking themselves, what am I doing? Why am I doing? And for whom I'm doing what I'm doing?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Well, this is fascinating. And again, we can talk for hours. And hey, maybe we need to do this again in like
in 6-9 months to see how changed the world is. The 6 months and 10 years is such a great point to bring back. Maybe as we kind of wrap up, you kind of touched now in the last point about the importance of what are the fundamental skills that you need to have early on in your career, because things are changing so much. But is there any advice that kind of stuck with you from early on through all of your different amazing achievements, something that you worth paying forward?
Can I provide two? But it's kind of a double layer. So I'm Italian, so I'm obsessed. And I'm obsessed with Leonardo, with Renaissance. And so probably, once again, my perspective is biased. But by the way, I have a personal blog, and this was one of my blog posts. We have seen the specialist, the hyper-specialist, the collaboration among specialists. And what we are seeing with AI is that maybe there will be a future for generalists, to professionals that want to adapt fast and quickly, not only to speaking about new legal services to offer, speaking about new ways to collaborate, new structures to introduce, new ways of doing things. So the idea is that, are we sure that being more specialized is the best possible choice? Because prompting 6 or 12 months from now will be old. Even context engineering, which is the vibe of the moment, vibe coding, everything is the vibe of the moment, 6 to 8 months, 18 months from now. So yeah, you can be a great expert in prompting, the best possible expert, but prompting it will be dead and there will be something different. And the idea is, are we focusing on being a specialized prompting professional, or do you want to be specialized in AI? And even if you want to specialize in AI, do you want to take a field, or do you want to adapt constantly? Once again, not a matter of right or wrong, just some food for thought. Maybe being a generalist and being flexible will be an asset and not a cost for companies. And recording suggestions, this is not coming from lawyers, not from equity partners, not from colleagues. It's coming from a coach. Well, he's not a coach. He was a physiotherapist that helped me during my marathon running. And I was not a marathon runner. Well, I've done a few marathons, but I'm still not a professional marathon runner. I'm way more an amateur at. So I was preparing my first marathon. And of course, like every marathon runner, you don't do 5, 10K, 20K. No, you just say, oh, I'm going to do a marathon, like, you know, the Ironman that was saying, never did triathlon. I say, okay, I want to do an Ironman. Same. And it told me something that when I looked back, I thought, oh, that could be interesting for the work I'm doing as well, which is start slow and increment 10% every week. So I say, you are not a runner. Your body needs to adapt. So you do 2-3 miles first run. Can you survive? Yes. Okay, the next week is 2.2. The next week is 2.5. Next week, maybe 3. Then it's 3.3. And then you arrive at 10. Then you arrive at 11. And soon, in 1 year, you'll be able to do the marathon. He was right. No injuries, marathon done. Not a great time, but that's another story. But the idea is that, how about thinking not in steps, not in scrums, but in an incremental way? So think about your law firm, think about your legal department, think about the way you process your work every day, think about your personal schedule, and find ways of improving 10% every week. In 1 year, you will be a totally different law firm, a totally different professional, a totally different legal department. Plus, once you're in the innovation wave, you started innovating. So I'm seeing things that want to start pretty big. Oh, let's introduce this contract management platform. Let's introduce, this new AI tool. This week, we found 2 ways for an AI course. Next week, we find ways to do a workshop. The week after, we do a co-creation session with the clients. And in 1 year, you will have done way more. Otherwise, it's lots of frustration, lots of costs, lots of expectations, and coming back to the human centricity point, the way lawyers deal with emotions is not ideal, you know.
Focus on the growth. I love it. One more thing that people don't, that we need to teach kids early on is the concept of compounding effect. I don't think most people actually understand how incredibly powerful it is in reality. Hey, Marco, this was phenomenal. If someone wants to continue talk with you, chat with you, or the blog, or read about this, where can they find you?
And Better Ipsum, we are on LinkedIn, we're on Instagram, we have a professional website, which is www.betteripsum.net. Regarding me, Marco, marcoimperiale.net, my personal website. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. And check out my blog. It's mostly Zen and futuristic law. And sometimes I speak about random stuff, music as well. But the idea is that you can't separate the human from the lawyer. And I hope we'll be able to see the two coming back to, you know, unity in a short time scenario. But I think it'll take way longer than I think.
Hey, man. Thanks again. That was fantastic.
Thanks to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.